Welcome to Dear Instructional Designer, episode 15. Hey everyone, welcome to Dear Instructional Designer, the show about the instructional design journey. I'm your host, Kristen Anthony. Today's guest is Jed Esposito, a guy I met on an instructional design social media group. Jed and I heckled each other. It was awesome. And then, over the course of participating in that group, I learned just how awesome Jed is. If you are a newbie ID out there looking to get into a big company, looking to respond to one of those scary job ads that say fast-paced environment, you need to listen to this interview. Jed shares a lot of great wisdom on the experience of transitioning from the public sector, universities, nonprofits, government positions, to the private sector. And not just any private sector business, a huge one. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Jed. All right, so let's get started. Okay. Jed, why don't you tell me a little bit about how you became an instructional designer?
Oh, boy. It's a crazy story. I actually, going back to while I was doing my undergrad, I was switching majors constantly and basically just ended up needing to choose something in order to graduate on time. And so elementary education ended up being the shortest path to graduation.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I took those classes and I think I was a pretty good teacher. I ended up teaching in Arizona for a year in the same elementary school that I went to. And I don't know, I liked teaching. I didn't like dealing with the administration and their crazy ideas about what was good teaching and, you know, teaching tests and things like that. Mm-hmm. So fast forward a year, I had an opportunity to move to Phoenix and live with a friend. And so I decided to do that and just started just doing part-time work. And that was really just like call center work, things like that, just to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And then I saw an ad in a paper to, teach English in South Korea. So I went and did that for a while. And while I was in South Korea, I decided, hey, you know what? When I go back to the States, I'd like to kind of get into technology. And so I did an online master's degree while living in South Korea in IT management. Mm-hmm. And finished that up before I came back. And when I got back, went back to my hometown in Arizona. It's a small town with a college, a community college. And ended up teaching GED classes for a while. So, again, teaching is a theme here.
Yeah.
But I had gotten that technology degree, and since I was teaching at that college, that you know they noticed that I was technically competent and hired me on as the technology administrator for the distance education department, which is a weird title, but basically I ended up managing their LMS, and that was everything, since it was a small department, ranging from, you know, keeping the server running to helping instructors build their courses. And so that sort of led into, you know, how do I build these courses so that they're good? And then one thing led to another, and I was hired for a short-term position in Chicago with SunGard, who is another company now. They were swallowed up, doing instructional design for National Lewis University. And then after that, I was hired back at MTC and moved back to Arizona to be their instructional designer and did that for a while. And I had lived at that point in all of these big cities, and I was back in my hometown, right? My small hometown.
Yeah.
So I was starting to lose my mind. So I started applying to, bigger cities, and Seattle had a job for me. I worked with King County. And that was really my first kind of e-learning development job. And I was building e-learning for paramedics and EMTs. to, you know, help them stay up to date in the latest, you know, how to do CPR to save someone's life, things like that. Mm-hmm. And did that for almost 2 years, and then saw this position at Amazon, and now I'm here. And the 2 years that I've been at Amazon now feel like 10 years. So that's my crazy story.
So, you know, what's awesome is that we actually had another instructional designer who had a path that was really similar to yours, really? All the way down to going to South Korea to teach English. So that is just really cool. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, how did you transition from the public sector into Amazon? Like, did you find it tough to sort of sell your expertise to them?
That's definitely a concern that they had. I've talked to my manager and some of the other people that were on the hiring committee before they hired me. You know, and they had that concern, would I be able to keep up? But I guess what assuaged them was just coming from the public sector, I got used to kind of spinning my wheels a lot, right? Things get caught up in committee, and that's a lot of what I talked about in the interview for Amazon, is how I really want to build stuff and put it out there and see what happens, experiment, right? And if it's not perfect, you know, we just do it again. And I think that working for a company like Amazon, that's something that they really understand, right? Even if a product fails, we've learned something, we can move forward from it. So just the ability to kind of invent and throw it out there is fun.
Nice.
That kind of answered the question. I strayed a bit there.
That absolutely answered the question. I mean, so along with that sort of ability to fail and iterate, what else would you say were some of the best parts of your job?
At Amazon?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the best thing for sure. I guess the second best thing is that I'm working with people who are, this might sound arrogant, but it's not. Working in the public sector, I ran into people a lot where I ran into situations where I was kind of the best in the room, right? And that's not the case here. There's people that on my team that are just phenomenal at something, right? There's some aspect of being an instructional designer, whether it's the content or it's the actual technical extension of the tools, who are just phenomenally better than me. And I like that, because then I can actually ask questions and I can grow rather than always being kind of the sage that everyone comes to. But I think it's a good combination. Yeah.
How do you guys work together? Like, you know, do you just, you know, you have your projects and then you just sort of consult them sometimes? Do you guys ever formally collaborate?
It kind of depends on the project. It depends on the scope. Our team's going through some growth right now, so things are, you know, in flux a little bit. But for the most part, someone will express interest or a need, and then our team will get together and determine who is best suited for it or who's interested, right? Sometimes my manager will just say, hey, who wants to take this? And then we all put our fingers on our nose and look away. No. You know, we'll take it, and for the most part, everyone's working on either something different or an aspect of something that's a little bit different from someone else. So we just kind of, we know each other's strengths and we know each other's weaknesses, and we'll use each other as best we can. And it's definitely a learning environment. We teach each other and support each other as much as we can. I would say one of the people that we hired a while back came on with, you know, a lot of content strength, but not a lot of technical strength. And in the time that person's been here, they've grown tremendously. I'm like constantly surprised by technically what they're able to put in front of the team. So,
yeah, nice. So, Jed, what would you say might be some of the things that are unique about your context in Amazon as opposed to, you know, like the public sector? What are some of the things that make working in your field different?
Oh, goodness. That's hard to say. I'd say in the public sector, I was meeting with a lot of the same people for, you know, different projects. And some of the projects were just massive, right?
Like, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like we need to redo the curriculum entirely for for science in the college or something like that, you know, mm-hmm, which is a massive mm-hmm. scope. The projects I work on here, I'd say range from medium to fairly quick. And the timelines here are just completely different, right? So mm-hmm, something mm-hmm. that takes me a week to do here, something that I have a week to do here, I should say, mm-hmm. I might have had like 6 months to do, right, at the community mm-hmm. college. And I like that. There's definitely times when I'm crunched and it gets stressful, but I just like being able to get it done and put it out and then, you know, get people's reactions to it. And it's not always perfect. I've definitely put things out that are broken or mm-hmm. misspelled or, you know, stuff like that, but you take it down and you fix it and put it back up. Whereas in the public sector, you know, you just never ever put it out there. It's in committee. Right. It goes back yeah. for review. And I guess that kind of depends on which public entity. But.
I mean, so how would someone prepare themselves for that sort of thing? You know, just that crunch timeline. How do you prepare yourself to sort of go into that without, you know, going nuts?
Yeah. I mean, I think I go a little bit nuts every time. For me, it's been a lot of discovering that I'm capable of more than I think uh-huh, every uh-huh. single project. And like, there's no possible way. And then at the end of the project, I'm like, how did that happen? yeah, I mean, I would say if someone else is looking to transition to kind of a fast pace of work like this in instructional design, you just have to be willing to pick up a tool that you know nothing about and start trying to build stuff in it and look at what's out there, what other people have built, and just try and build it. Do research on Google, find out if there's shortcuts, learn the shortcuts. So for an example, recently I was asked to do kind of a kinetic typography video in mm-hmm. in After Effects mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and never done anything remotely like that before. I'd say the closest thing I've gotten was like using Prezi, which is not really kinetic typography.
Right.
And did some research and found these scripts called Monkey Scripts, which work with After Effects, and they make it a lot easier to do. It's still not, you know, the easiest thing in the world, but yeah, with those scripts and with research and just kind of the willingness to dive in. Police car behind me. Can you hear that?
yeah, I can.
with that willingness, I think as long as you're willing to devote the time and try new things, you can go far.
That's awesome. What do you guys have if you're comfortable sharing, do you have like mm-hmm. a set tool set that you use? Or not set, but, you know, maybe like a base tool set that you use?
Yeah, I think on our team, Storyline is our primary tool. Mm-hmm. We make heavy use of Illustrator because mm-hmm. we're really not into like finding pictures. Huh. We'd rather just, you know, draw stuff. We
okay.
focus a lot on making the interface really usable and interesting. And so we'll design a lot of that in Illustrator before we start building in Storyline. And then, you know, flexibly change it constantly as we get feedback. Mm-hmm. So I would say Storyline, Illustrator the most. Recently, I've been in After Effects for like the last 2 months building videos. Now that I know how to build those, there's a lot of requests for similar things.
That's what you get for helping.
Yep. So I think that'd be the base. But beyond that, like anything that will produce any kind of media at all, it's on our radar and we, you know, try to dabble with it, especially if there's a need for that kind of output. Mm.
Do you guys concern yourself with like accessibility, you know, either of physical disabilities or, you know, sight or hearing?
So much less, so much less than I did in the public sector.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We're starting to get some requests for things like captioning. Mm-hmm. For our particular work, I'd say there's less demand for the things like for things like hearing and sight, just because some of the fulfillment center audience can't really, as far as I understand, be involved in some of those jobs. But that's something we're looking to move more toward. We've gotten requests to start captioning videos. Other than that, like for the e-learning modules, there haven't been any requests yet. It'd be interesting to see what happens when requests do start coming in. I think the next iteration of Storyline is supposed to be a little easier to do that with. So, yeah.
Okay. So you guys sort of do a mix of sort of e-learning modules and then like separate videos or
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the need. Yeah, so yeah. We really kind of have a moments of need approach, right? So I don't know if you're familiar with that particular learning theory.
No, I'm not.
Essentially, it's based on the idea that during the course of someone's job, there's different moments of need, right? Like I'm new to this job and I need to know where to even start. I'm doing the job and I need materials that are going to support me, or I'm stuck and I need some help getting out of this problem, right? And there's some other ones. But based on each of those moments of need, there's, you know, a different kind of learning product that can help address that need.
Oh, awesome.
So what we typically end up doing is kind of this toolkit approach, right? So we try and create a landing page for, you know, whatever it is, and filter the learners there based on whatever their moment of need is. So we'll have things like guides, quick reference things, you know, all the way to really comprehensive guides and videos and e-learning. And we don't do a whole lot of in-person stuff. But we've done some, you know, slide decks and stuff for business analysts to present with and things like that.
That's really cool. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I think that'll be that'll be really awesome for people to know about. So, Jed, what would you say are some of the just general methods or ways of thinking that you've developed that help you do your job better?
Oh, goodness. So I'm not, I've tried so many times to adopt things like, you know, even just like organized with a calendar, you know, to get work done. I'm just not that way. And I can't ever stick to those things. For me, I always just have a grid paper notebook. And anytime I have a thought or learn something, I'll jot it down. And I like to sketch a lot. As far as like juggling multiple projects, the best advice I have is, I think in our field, it's a little easier, right? Because if you get tired of, it depends on, you know, what you're building, but say you have a week to build an e-learning module. And I want to build something that's rich and interactive and fun. That ranges from working with the content to illustration to a little bit of, you know, GUI programming. So there's always the ability to kind of switch gears. And then I found that I tend to go like long stretches at my desk and not realize that time has passed and like get completely lost. So I try and actively get up out of my desk and wander around. But I think that kind of combination is what keeps me on top of things.
Nice. Okay. So what model or process do you guys use for like a kickoff or a collaboration with someone who's asked for training? Like, how does that work?
Gosh. Our intake is pretty conversational. We don't really do a form. We really have tried to stay away from kind of templating intake because at least I think it's because it kind of tends to make everything the same in the output, right? So we want to be flexible. We want to make sure that we're meeting whatever the stakeholders' needs are. So It's really just a lot of conversation. We'll set up meetings with, you know, the first line people and find out from them who else we should talk to, taking notes and really trying to wrap our heads around whatever it is, mm-hmm. right? If it's a process, or if it's the business doesn't really have processes figured out, but they need us to help design the process, mm-hmm. right? And that's done, you know, not formally, but sometimes you have to make those decisions, right? Like, I think this is the one that we'll go with. but yeah, I'd say it's just a lot of conversation.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. What has been your biggest sort of challenge working with subject matter experts?
I think for the most part, it's been pretty good. One of my pet peeves would be like, if I'm showing them something functional and all they want to come back with is like, spelling corrections, you know, like the content could be in Latin, right? And they'll be like, what is this? Just imagine that's useful content, yeah. Things like that. But for the most part, I've been lucky, I think, to work with really, really knowledgeable people, who it isn't too difficult to get to kind of see where you want to go with something. Mm-hmm. So I think a part of that is just because we're kind of a prototyping shop, right? So I'll talk to them, I'll throw something together that won't look amazing, but we'll get the idea mm-hmm. across. And then we'll just keep iterating on that until it meets their need.
And I mean, sort of along with the conversational approach that you guys have, what else do you think helps you to build relationships and trust when you're working with a new SME so that they, you know, they become more receptive to maybe your ideas or your prototypes?
Sure. I mean, before I even joined the team, well, before I joined, it was just one person, but that one person is just kind of phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So there's really a reputation with our team.
Okay.
And the stuff we put out has been so high polish and high quality. It's like a creative agency, right? Mm, almost.
Nice.
So we can always point new people to examples of things that we've done. I just did that recently for this video that I finished today. A week ago, I was approached asking if I could put it together or put a video together, and they didn't really know what they wanted. So I showed them, you know, a bunch of different examples that our team had made, and they chose this style. So kind of like that, we have a menu of things that they can look back on, and you know, they've had good interactions with us, mm-hmm. Or, you know, people that they know within our department. So
yeah, that's so cool that you guys have all of these processes in place, you know, and these, you know, like, here's some stuff that we can show you. And I feel like I haven't had that yet. Maybe I will at some point, but that is just really cool.
I think that's, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think it's almost the same as, you know, interviewing for a position and having that portfolio to kind of point, you know, here's what I've been able to do in the past,
yeah.
And just have a good variety of things. You know, if anyone's listening who has that trouble a lot, right, with SMEs,
yeah.
just start preparing stuff, you know, build stuff, dive into tools and try them out and save the things you make.
Nice. That's really good advice. It's really good advice. So when you talk to your SMEs, do you sort of use instructional design language, or do you use the language of the business to try and...
That depends on which one of us is talking to the SMEs. I am the least... so I'm very, very well written. I am not very well spoken, I don't think.
You sound great.
Especially, I think coming from the public sector especially, I'm getting better at it now because I've been here 2 years. I'm starting to understand the business. But coming from the public sector into this business world, I completely lacked business speak. And I'm kidding you not, like, I'd sit down with business analysts and SMEs, and they would talk, and I would stare blankly back at them like, okay, well, I have no idea what you just said. let's start over. But I think that's a big part of working well with anyone, right? SMEs or anyone is kind of being willing to admit that you're fallible and you don't have all the answers, especially in our field, because it's I'm almost always working with some new content that in a field that I know nothing about really. Right. And so I'm trying to wrap my head around it at, you know, this high level. I think the humble approach of teach this to me like I'm two is a good one to have.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, how do you guys, so you talked about how, you know, you guys have built this reputation for yourself. You built sort of a portfolio of things. How do you guys sort of measure success or your impact with the things that you've created? You know, so that you can go to the business analyst and say, yeah, our training helped to reach this outcome.
We've got a variety of different ways. We're, of course, looking to improve them as much as we can. we obviously have those, you know, first and second level feedbacks, things like surveys, and kind of looking at, did they get the question, you know, was this question particularly difficult, things like that. And that's all done within the LMS. We typically, when we start projects, we'll try and identify before we even begin, you know, what's the behavior, what's the thing that needs to change, and what business metrics can we tie that to, so that when we finish, that's what we measure later on. And that's measured all over the place, right? It could be from the ticketing software. It could be from, you know, some budget somewhere. It just kind of depends on how the business is measuring it already.
Okay, good, good. So Jed, what would you say you would look for in an ID colleague or employee?
Ooh, that's a loaded one. I would say for me, I like people who are both humble, but willing to dive in to things that they don't know how to do, right? Mm-hmm. So if I hand you a tool and you've never done anything before, I want to see you do more than just, like, you should pull up Google because that's how you're going to learn about it. But I want to see you do more than just research, research, research. I want to see you crack the tool open and, you know, investigate and try and build stuff with mm-hmm. it. So those two things, I think, in the context of my team, just being someone who collaborates, right? Someone who can bring some kind of specific value to the team, whether you're an incredible illustrator, you're really great with content. Anytime someone has a question, be willing to kind of go that extra mile and not just take something off someone's plate, but kind of bring them along and teach them how you came to that conclusion or how you did that or something like mm-hmm. that.
And how do you guys share knowledge with each other? I mean, besides talking, I mean, you know, like I'm always thinking mm-hmm. about sustainability. You know, if you win the lottery and leave forever and we never see you again, how do you share knowledge with your other teammates?
A variety of ways. We're actually working on kind of an internal, probably like every other week meeting where one of us can share something specific, you know,
nice.
Whether it's something we learned about UI design or, you know, how to build these Kinect videos. But in terms of like saving information, mm-hmm. We kind of use several different ways, but we do have a team OneNote called the Tome of Knowledge. That we, if we learn something important or something that we know people need to reuse, most of us will pop that thing open and open up a new tab and jot it down. Okay. And then we have lots of file, you know, storage and backup. I think that's another thing is kind of because of this iterative nature of a lot of our projects, especially with the e-learning modules, right? Mm-hmm. We're always kind of going back, popping them open and improving on them. And usually as we improve upon them, we have this eye toward simplifying how they function on the back end, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, if I did die, when someone opens it up, it'll be a little bit more obvious how it's built and how it functions. And, you know, we're using some crazy, not advised kind of story. Well, I guess not advised, but not supported tricks and storyline mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we make use of the notes feature, right? And we'll type how this works in there so that if someone's opening that layer and looking at it and is confused, they can read that and find out what's going on.
Okay, great.
So stuff like that.
Yeah. And you know, Jed, I've heard you talk about all these, you know, I'm always going on about how instructional designers and developers, perhaps in particular, have all these different competencies. And, you know, I've heard you talk about UI design and UX and programming. Mm-hmm. I mean, would you agree that there is just sort of a lot of competencies involved in doing the work that you do?
There definitely are. I think for new people, it would be easy to get overwhelmed. The best thing I can say there is you don't have to be an expert at all of them right off the mm-hmm. bat, but what you do need to be is interested in trying as much of them as you can, right? Mm-hmm. You may mm-hmm. think, I am a terrible artist. I never want to draw anything ever. That's fine. You still need to be willing to like pop open PowerPoint and try and make a visual representation so that you can show clients like what it is you want to build. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think being willing to get your feet wet, being willing to investigate new things. And we live in an age where you can get to whatever knowledge you want on the internet, yeah. Really. So you can Google search how to build a kinetic typography video and learn to do it in 2 weeks if you are motivated yeah. enough.
And so the last question here is, you know, one skill that you would say every newbie ID across the board should develop. Would that be it for you? Sort of develop your curiosity in doing multiple different things?
Yes, I would say so. Definitely. I think if I were to get a little bit more concrete, I would challenge people to, in whatever development tool they're using, look at that tool and find out if there are ways to use it that are not advertised, mm-hmm. right? So when I open Storyline, I actually don't open Storyline and then think of an idea. I usually think of, you know, hey, I want to build, you know, I want to build a game where I can move someone around with the arrow keys, for example. And, you know, I know out of the box, that's not something Storyline does, but then I'll open Storyline and start screwing around with it until I have something or until I hit a wall. And if I hit a wall, I go to Google mm-hmm. and start researching. And, you know, that usually opens 10 other doors, and I know nothing about 9 of them. But I think that kind of curiosity, not just wanting to read about something,
right.
but wanting to actually try and make an idea into something physical.
Awesome. 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 Yes, I am completely on board with everything you just said. All right. So, Jed, are you ready? It is the rapid fire portion of the show.
I don't know.
Well, get ready, man. Okay.
All right.
All right. So, instructional designer or learning experience designer?
Oh, gosh. Learning experience designer.
What is one piece of advice you wish someone had given you as a beginner ID?
Don't drink so much coffee. You're going to get addicted.
What books, blogs, or research are you reading lately?
Nothing. I don't have time.
Nice. Okay.
I'm developing.
Awesome. Okay. One thing that should be in every ID's portfolio.
Uh, That is a difficult question. I would say a storyline module that conveys a story.
Oh, okay.
A learning experience.
Awesome. All right. One piece of interview wisdom.
Be honest, be candid, and be humble. That's a lot of pieces, but be assertive at the same time.
Okay. All right. Favorite project that you're working on right now?
Right now, I think the one I just wrapped up, which was another one of those kinetic typography videos. But this time I have a 3D butterfly flying around throughout the video, which is quite a feat for me.
All right. Last but not least, where can people catch up with you?
Let's see. I guess people are welcome to email me. I can share that email with you. If they'd like to get in touch and if they can contact you, that'd be fine.
All right. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Jed. So amazing to get to talk to Jed. He gave so much insight, and I love how he talked about his transition from the public sector into the private sector. I can tell you, private industry has been something that I personally have been sort of scared of, but being able to talk to people like Jed is amazing, and I hope you got as much out of it as I did. If you've got any questions, let me know about them. Tweet at me. I'm at AnthChris. Or you can shoot me an email at kristen@dearinstructionaldesigner.com. Thanks so much for listening, and take care.